from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is The Good Atheist.
Welcome to The Good Atheist. I'm Jacob 14. This is your news for the second half of June 2024. Russian government promises soldiers resurrection. The war in Ukraine is a modern tragedy. With the ambition of Russia to be once more a superpower, this can only come at the expense of its former republic states, such as Georgia and Ukraine. Once upon a time, these were the pride and joy of the Soviet Union. Now they are, as of today, countries that had long wished to no longer be under the yoke of their Soviet masters. The rights of other countries to decide their own fate is not a proposition that a man like Vladimir Putin respects. After years of fomenting mistrust and rebellion in the young republic, by 2014 they were in open war after the capture of Crimea. The rest of the world was slow to act, and it was only after their official invasion, which was hilariously called a special military operation, that the West decided to actually get involved. We are now 10 years into this conflict, which really only got seriously bloody in the last three. So far, Russia has lost an estimated 500,000 soldiers due to death or injury. Not since the Second World War have we seen a major country have such high casualties, with some days seeing over 1,000 dead. There are so many dead, in fact, that Russia is now trying to convince their soldiers that they will be guaranteed to be resurrected, declaring that the conflict is now a holy war. This is partially due to the fact that Ukraine has firmly rejected their Russian Orthodox connections, which was one of the ways that the Kremlin could exercise unofficial power over the region. The creation of the Ukrainian Orthodox Church, based somewhere in Canada, by the way, sent Russia on a crusade to force them back into the fold. One of the madmen claiming that soldiers serving in the army are coming back to life is a man named Artemy Vladimirov. This archbishop has made it his mission to convince men fighting a pointless war that death is not real.
In war, there are no unbelievers. When you are facing physical death, every fiber of your soul comes alive. Right now, there are many wonderful testimonies of Christ's victory over death. My wife sends me many military testimonies and video clips. Before Lent, I watched a video about one Chinese man who participated in the special military operation. A bullet hit him in the stomach, destroying all of his insides. He died from this and then was resurrected. Saint Luke of Crimea appeared to him and completely healed him. His insides were fully restored. He was baptized along with his relatives. All of them are photographed together, dressed in white clothes, baptized into our Orthodox Church.
We're supposed to take this lunatic at his word that people are coming back to life. How amazing that a nameless Chinese man was brought back from the dead. It must have happened, since this bearded weirdo that colludes with his evil government to send men to their deaths told me so. Let's not forget that this is the same man who claims the ghost of Charles Darwin visited him and renounced the theory of evolution. What a guy. Southern Baptist Church can't be trusted. Religions are always protecting their own. There is an unspoken rule in sectarian circles, or in the cases of some churches, actual memos, you don't rat out your fellow Christian, no matter the crime. You see, to hardcore believers, it is the outside secular world that is to be feared. The fact that there are countless wolves in sheep clothing among their ranks is less terrifying to them than the prospects of the secular world interfering with their affairs. Still, news often leaks of the countless instances of child rapes and other horrid crimes. In order to try and pretend that they are doing something about it, the Southern Baptist Church has pledged a few years ago to create a website meant to track individual abusers within the church. With hundreds of cases, it should have been a breeze. Instead, they've been stalling so bad that not one single name is on their pathetic excuse for a website. To date, no names appear on the Ministry Check website designed to track abusive pastors, despite a mandate from Southern Baptist to create the database. The committee has found no permanent home for funding for abuse reforms, meaning that two of the task force chief tasks remain unfinished. Instead, she said, SBC leaders do just enough to make it look like they care without any real progress. Do you mean to say that a religious organization, which had previously done everything in its power to either ignore abuse or protect abusers, would only offer empty platitudes instead of solutions? What a shocker! Next thing you'll try to tell me is that water is wet and that fire burns. So, what's behind the veil of secrecy, you may wonder? Why, it's the most important thing to any church, of course, money! SBC leaders have long sought to shield the denomination, especially the hundreds of millions of dollars given to Southern Baptist mission boards and other entities, from liabilities for sexual abuse. The 12.9 million member denomination has no direct oversight of its church entities, which are governed by trustees, making it a billion-dollar institution that, for all intents and purposes, does not exist outside of a few days in June when the SBC annually meet in this session. There's more employee oversight for Uber than there is for Southern Baptist pastors. Pathetic. The SBC even tried to stop an independent couple from posting their own lists, sending them a threatening email. Luckily, because the names they published are of convicted felons, they're immune from being sued for essentially telling the truth. Anyone who still thinks that billion-dollar evil organizations gives an iota of care for their flock beyond the ability to fleece them is officially a moron. Thanks for helping these clowns make the world a worse and less safe place to live. Taliban kills gay man, sends video to family. The Taliban is perhaps one of the most vile organizations on earth. Although the name is derived from the Pashtun word for student, the only thing these monsters are students of are the worst aspects of humanity, its cruelty and stupidity. While they were at war with the Soviet government, they were trained and armed by America, only to later go to war with them a few decades later. Then, when the U.S. withdrew from Afghanistan, they made a deal with the devil in return for assurances that they would help them fight their greater enemy, Al-Qaeda. The results were predictable. The agreement wasn't worth the paper it was written on. The goals of the groups are simple. They want women to stay in the home and be constantly barefoot and preggers, ban all forms of entertainment, and destroy any other religious or ethnic minorities that they dislike. Among those that get their goats are gay people. With such fundamentalists in power, it's not surprising that people of the LGBT community are in constant danger. Just a few days ago, a gay man was murdered, and the whole affair was videotaped. With the deed done, the tape was then sent to the family members as a chilling reminder that no one is safe. Hamad Saburi of Kabul, Afghanistan, died on August 5th, activists said. The news of the 22-year-old's death only became public this week after his former boyfriend informed the media. Graphic video footage of a murder, which Insider has viewed, appeared to show a man resembling Saburi being shot in the neck and head at least 12 times. Days later, the Taliban sent the disturbing execution video to Saburi's relatives and friends, who, in turn, forwarded it to the Afghan LGBTQ group Roshaniya. His boyfriend is now in hiding, afraid that he will soon suffer the same fate. The chilling message was received. Gays are living in constant fear, with danger lurking at every corner. My heart hurts at the idea of my fellow human beings being hunted simply because of how they feel inside. The Taliban, and all of fundamentalist Islam, is a bane on mankind, one that I can only hope will someday be in the dustbin of history. Colorado GOP wants pride flags burned. For the American Republican Party, it has become the norm to be in a state of near constant fear and hatred. They seem intent on being the voice of those who wish to see people of different sexual orientation ostracized, harmed, and even killed. The GOP is intent on spreading the dangerous lies that the LGBTQ community is grooming children to sexually abuse them. Since the party itself seems to have moved to a post-truth view of the world, it matters little that there is no proof in these allegations. If only they showed such zeal for their own religious institutions, which have already have hundreds of thousands of incidents of child abuse. Instead, their hateful rhetoric becomes a calling card for the extreme fringe of their constituents, impotent men armed to the teeth, thinking that they will be heroes instead of domestic terrorists. The most recent example of this is in Colorado. You may remember that in 2002, a pathetic excuse for a human being named Anderson Lee Aldrich entered a gay nightclub called Club Q, dressed in body armor and carrying an AR-15-style rifle. He opened fire on innocent people, killing 5 and injuring a further 25. The tragedy would have claimed further victims, were he not stopped by a patron of the bar, a U.S. Army veteran by the name of Richard Fierro. This true American hero tackled the 300-pound of human excrement to the ground, knocking the gun out of his hand. 2 other patrons helped hold him down as the authorities made their way. Aldrich had previous incidents with police in the past, including threatening his grandparents for ruining his plans for a mass shooting. Of course, because this is a red state, this ticking time bomb was allowed to continue to own weapons, despite serious incidents with police and even the FBI, or him hosting a website advocating for the killing of civilians to cleanse society. It was therefore only a matter of time before the continued lies and propaganda against the LGBT community, now perpetuated openly by the Republican Party, would incense someone into violence. It seems that they are now doubling down on this dangerous rhetoric. No longer are they skirting around their hatred for the LGBT community. They are now openly calling for people to burn pride flags, as though they were in the middle of Kabul. "Burn all the pride flags this June," the state GOP wrote Monday on the social platform X. Earlier, an email sent by the party with the subject line, "God hates pride," perpetuated the false claim that LGBTQ people are grooming children to abuse them. "The month of June has arrived, and once again, the godless groomers in our society want to attack what is decent, holy, and righteous so they can ultimately harm our children," reads the email. Social media response is, of course, mixed. People with crosses in their profiles are just as likely to condemn it as to embrace it. It's telling. Those of us with our heads screwed on properly know that advocating for the destruction of private property by a major political party is outrageous, to say the least. But this type of thuggish behavior is becoming all too common. Those that support this kind of open animosity and hatred should be closely monitored. They are at the knife's edge of fascism without knowing what it is. The only bright light at the end of this dark tunnel is that this type of strategy is going to blow up majorly for the GOP. You see, there is a large, unvocal majority that sees all of this and have a strong reaction against it. They just aren't social media savvy and are smart enough not to engage in online toxicity. But they vote, and often they have no real political alliance. They simply try to balance out the left-right divide, often punishing groups if their power goes unchecked. Well, this is as power-hungry as it gets, and considering the fact that people are leaving churches that promote such hatred, I find it difficult to imagine where all of these voters are that the GOP is hoping to attract with open calls for assault and violence. Hopefully, the decency of people will shine through when it comes time to elect their new representatives. There is a lot of hatred in the halls of government, and it needs to be expunged. Judging by the fact that Fierro's family has been endlessly harassed by bigots who invent stories to demonize him, our prospects for the future does not look good. Islamic scholar abuses minor, threatened to kill him. TGA has been reporting on a number of Christian abusers recently, which has probably given our audience the mistaken impression that only Jesus lovers are abusing kids on a global scale. Please allow me to dissuade this opinion by bringing up a case of an imam in India recently convicted of abusing a young boy. Unfortunately, the news report fails spectacularly in providing important details, such as the bloody name of the monster. They did release details of the conviction, however. It seems that the young boy was assaulted multiple times when he attended religious classes, with the old pervert even threatening him with drowning if he told anyone what happened. The sick bastard will be spending the next 56 years in prison. Hopefully he dies there, never to spend any more time with young people. As for the news organization which reported the assault, it's pathetic that they couldn't even be bothered to publish the name of this degenerate. Those of us actually interested in keeping religions accountable find this kind of information critical. Was it a simple oversight, or were they showing favoritism? I guess it's hard to tell with bad journalism. Partial apology by U.S. bishops promises little. Should every apology lead to forgiveness? This is a complex moral question. It would be tempting to answer yes, and to believe that all human beings are worthy of redemption. There are always outliers in any group, and overall it is reasonable to assume that the vast majority of people are worthy of a second chance, especially when they make an honest and sincere apology. The world is more complex than this trite observation would have you believe. It's not only people who issue apologies. Sometimes it's entire organizations and institutions. One in particular, the Catholic Church, has committed so many atrocities over the centuries of its existence that it would take many lifetimes of work to simply identify them all, let alone do anything about them. One of the many recent scandals it is involved with is the uncovering of mass graves in their 80 government-sponsored boarding gulags. The rampant sexual, physical, and mental abuse suffered at their hands has never been fully accounted for. The church, which keeps meticulous records, have provided no helpful documentation for fear that it would harm their financial bottom line. Instead, they offered a partial apology that took only part of the blame for what had happened. The church recognizes that it has played a part in traumas experienced by Native children, the document said, saying these tragedies led to addiction, domestic abuse, abandonment, and neglect that harmed families. Played a part? They were the main event! It almost sounds like they want to throw their hands in the air and say, well, it was also the government's fault for sending those guys to our rape dens in the first place. Sure, the government did place them in their care, which was wrong to begin with, but the church could have showed them love, compassion, and charity they keep claiming to have a monopoly on. Instead, they beat them, starved them, sexually abused them, and countless other horrors that went on for decades. When you need to take responsibility for literal crimes against humanity, maybe don't start with played a part. To offer a proper apology, it's important to be honest when it comes to exactly what part you played. Take, for instance, the part they played in the extermination of Jews in Nazi Germany. In exchange for becoming the official religion of the country, they helped the exterminators find the families, often pretending to provide asylum for them but turning them in anyways, and whisking away the perpetrators to safe territory in Latin America when things went tits up. Those are things that they have yet to specifically apologize for as well, or make up for in any way. Instead, they still collect part of every German citizen's paycheck, unless that person specifically asked them not to. That deal with the Nazis stuck around, unsurprisingly. This pathetic apology is a way to try and reconcile with their native believers, who feel a great deal of uncertainty about their faith following the harrowing details of the history of abuse. For most old Catholics whose ancestors have had their faith imbued at the edge of a sword, enough time has passed that the church's atrocities are long forgotten. In native communities, the wounds of the past are still fresh. It's causing problems for the church's bottom line, so something had to be done. Their plan? An impotent apology that serves only to highlight just how out of touch they are, and a promise to listen. Platitudes and empty gestures. Pathetic. Megachurch pastor admits to child abuse. If you want to truly understand the horrors of child abuse at the hands of men of faith, I believe you should familiarize yourself in the case of Cindy Clemmyshire. When she was a 12-year-old girl, she was sexually molested for years by a trusted family friend named Robert Morris. Morris was a young preacher traveling at the time and would often stay with the family in the Clemmyshire home. For a while, it all seemed so innocent, until Christmas night of 1982, when Morris asked Cindy to join him in his room. It was there that he began to molest her, all the while warning her that if she told anyone, it would ruin everything. The sick behavior continued for years, until in 1987 when Cindy told a friend of the abuse. This friend suggested she speak to her parents about it. Her father was livid, demanding that the Shady Grove Church report him, or that he should go to the police. Instead, Morris chose to voluntarily take a long leave of absence from ministering. He blamed Cindy for being seductive, which explains why his wife, Debbie, later called Cindy and said that she forgave her. Here's this pathetic response. When I was in my early 20s, I was involved in inappropriate sexual behavior with a young lady in a home where I was staying. It was kissing and petting and not intercourse, but it was wrong. This behavior happened on several occasions over the next few years. In March of 1987, the situation was brought to light, and it was confessed and repented for. I submitted myself to the elders of Shady Grove Church and the young lady's father. They asked me to step out of the ministry and receive counseling in Freedom Ministry, which I did. Since that time, I have walked in purity and accountability in this area, Morris said in his statement, adding that he and his wife met with a survivor and his family in 1989. Well, give the man a prize for not having intercourse with a child. What idiot would believe for even a second that this guy is reformed? When a man accuses a little girl of seducing him, you know that something's not going on right in the guy's head. What he needs is to be held accountable for his actions. Are Christians so desperate for pastors that they're willing to forgive the unforgivable? If Cindy's family did forgive him, what effect did their pathetic excuse for parenting do to her sense of self? Here's the thing. You don't need to forgive your rapists. Some acts are beyond forgiveness. You would think that someone molesting your child would be one of those. For some religious folks, I guess it's just another Monday. Heat kills over 1,000 visiting Mecca. In ancient times, the city of Mecca was a place in the middle of nowhere, notable only for the fact that a temple existed there, where many different idols of gods resided. People of all different kinds of faith would visit it, if only to show piety to their chosen gods. When Islam came along, these other idols were destroyed. The only thing that was preserved was a black onyx rock, and in order to make it fit with their new religion, Islam claimed that the rock had been found by one of their early church fathers, Abraham. The site became what is now called the Kaaba, and every year tens of thousands of Muslims make the dangerous trek to this hellhole, presumably to impress their creator God. Over the years, there have been many deaths. Some were due to tramplings, and a few were a result of fires. This year, because of an intense heat wave, you can add heat stroke to the list of ways their supposed loving God rewards them for turning around in circles for his glory. So, just how hot was it? Saudi State TV said temperatures rose on Monday to as high as 51.8 degrees Celsius, or 125.2 degrees Fahrenheit, in the shade at the Grand Mosque in Mecca. That's 51 degrees. In the shade! No wonder people were dropping like flies. Over 1,000 people are now dead thanks to this useless tradition. Folks, here's an idea. Stay home and pray to your invisible friend in the comfort of your air-conditioned houses. No god is worth dying in the middle of nowhere for. Man set on fire for blasphemy in Pakistan. In yet another display of compassion from the religion of peace, a man in Pakistan was burned to death by a mob after being arrested for supposed blasphemy. The man, identified as Mohammed Ismail, who appears to have been a tourist, was ganged up by a group of people at the local market and brought over to the police, claiming that he had desecrated the most useless book in history, the Quran. Shortly after, the local mosque decided that this was not enough and quickly radicalized their followers into deadly action. According to witnesses, the mob asked police to hand over the suspect to them, and on their refusal, forced their way into the police station. Police officials had to flee to save themselves while more reinforcements were called in to deal with a tense law and order situation. So to recap, we have absolutely no idea what this man's supposed crime was or the name of the people who actually incited this violence. In other words, everyone is going to walk away scot-free, and an innocent man is dead because the feelings of the world's most insecure religion were offended. In Pakistan, blasphemy accusations abound, and while it can carry a death sentence, the government doesn't usually need to carry out their sentence. Their insane citizens will usually do it for them. All one needs to do is make an accusation. This is not unlike the burning of witches in Europe. People use the obsessiveness of the church to easily kill their hated rivals, using the blunt instrument of faith as their instrument of murder. It seems very little has changed. And with that, I'd like to thank all my listeners, and especially my Patreon supporters. Have a great Atheist Day, everybody.